This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
He knows how to not only just read the room, but play the room and command the room, because in certain meetings, even with Elliot Wolf present and John Stretch Stryker, we're going to get into in a minute, but Ryan Cowden, he's in charge. He's running the room. Everything flows through him. And that capacity to handle everything is something you heard is just wild from all the organizational juggling the draft, juggling free agency, coaching hires. It all goes through him and he can do it.
Yeah. I mean, some of these like meetings with agents, there's only one front office guy involved or whatever it is. But like with the big names, Vrabel is involved. With the big draft prospects, Vrabel is involved. Hiring the staff, Vrabel is involved. Like he's very on top of everything. I think the Patriots are obviously in really great hands with Mike Vrabel, because that's what everyone within the building is saying about him as well.
Doug Kide, Andrew Callahan, Boston Herald. A lot of good stuff over the weekend. Patriots free agency buzz, draft buzz, all coming out of Indianapolis and the Combine, their coverage there. We talked about it earlier in the show. We'll get back into it. High noon here on Jones and Keefe on WEEI. The Jones and Keefe bracket topics are being voted on now, Keefe.
Razor thin right now. Oh, really, three. Three of
it's
our
three-horse race right now.
It is a three-horse race right now. Sports nicknames getting very little love. That's fine. I think that'd be the hardest one for us to come up with the 64 anyway, so I'm good with that.
Okay.
The other three, though.
Other three. You're
duking it out.
Every vote counts.
Of course.
Vote or die, as they say. I mean, I don't want to tell you what to do.
Just like in all polling.
But yeah, if you want to vote along, it's at Jones and Keefe. We'll unveil the winner tomorrow, and we'll get into the bracket by the middle of the week on Wednesday.
All right.
617-779-7937. Let's go to Randy in Providence. We've been waiting for a little bit before we get into some of the takeaways from the Herald and the Patriots being out on Deebo Samuel, now a Washington Commander. Randy, what do you got today?
Hey, I just wanted to talk about Tetterell and McMillan there. I know he's been a popular, in the last day or so, pickup for the Patriots. There's been interest in him with the reports. But looking back at his game log, I mean, he played 12 games this season. 38% of his yards came from two of those games against New Mexico and against West Virginia, not NFL caliber cornerbacks. You talk 506 yards in those two games, plus five of his eight touchdowns in those two games. If you take those games out, he's got 813 yards, three touchdowns, and a 12.7 yards per reception average, which isn't particularly impressive for a 6'5 receiver in a league like that.
So, Randy, I'll grant you that, but I'll also say out the other side of my mouth, I'm not the biggest fan of Tet McMillan, who Chris Scheim, in his mock draft 2.0, WEEI.com, we talked to him in the first hour of the show. You can seek that out on the Odyssey app, AUDACY. Get it on your phone, free, easy, take it with you wherever you go. He has the Patriots trading down with the Jets from 4 to 7, getting a second rounder in the future and a fourth rounder this year, and taking T-Mac at 7. So I didn't realize most of his production came in those two games. I can dig in on that more, but I have kind of excused away the lack of production out of Luther Burden III out of Missouri, who's the receiver I like best in this draft. He lost a lot around him from a year prior where he put up monster numbers in 2023. This year, not so much. And so with college football, I think it's, and college hoops as well, I think it's dangerous to just fall in love with numbers.
Yeah, good or bad.
It's very much they're not irrelevant, but I wouldn't make those the end all be all because of they're very reliant on what's around them. And at a place like Arizona, what's around McMillan? Who are they going against? And I'd say the same thing about Luther Burden. Missouri is not every year a top 25 type of team. They're just not. And so when you lose a lot of what's around you in a conference like the SEC, that's going to impact you greatly. I was a big believer in this with Drake May. Drake May's numbers tailed off at UNC. Not that, you know, North Carolina in the ACC is the same as the SEC.
Josh Allen's did at Wyoming.
So I was a big believer in that with Drake May. I'm like, I've seen it. I don't care as much that his numbers dropped off. It's not irrelevant, but I'm just not going to let that get in the way of a guy who was flashed before when he had talent around him. That's how I feel about Luther Burden. And, you know, I'm willing to dismiss the numbers there. I just don't like that style of receiver in Tet McMillan, and they can work. You know, Mike Evans can work.
Yeah.
AJ Green worked.
He did have a good day against Travis Hunter.
Did he?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, interesting.
They kind of went back and forth a little bit, but he had a good day against Travis Hunter.
So look,
this last year he didn't.
Was that 2 years ago?
I'm looking at the 2024 game log. He had 5 for 38 against Colorado.
Okay, so it was 2 years ago. Never mind.
Oh boy,
he had a touchdown too. They
put the clamps on him. See what happened there. No, I just don't want a receiver at 7. Or if they trade down from 4 to 7, I want Travis Hunter. But I look at him differently.
I don't in this draft.
I don't. I'm
like
just,
last year's draft. That was the perfect spot to get one.
I loved Marvin Harrison in last year's draft and Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas, but Jalen Polk, Javon Baker, the history of wide receivers with the Patriots, and I know most of it was Bill Belichick. However, Elliot Wolf has been on the staff for a while. So did Elliot Wolf like Tyquan Thornton? Maybe he did.
My conspiracy theory last year is the reason it took so long to cut him is because Wolf and Groh and those guys were believers in Tyquan Thornton.
You do want fast guys.
You can't just blame Bill. They got a fast guy.
So all the years that Bill famously would take a really bad receiver like N'Keal Harry over a bunch of really good receivers, we don't know how much Elliot Wolf was chiming in. And even if you want to say, none. Okay, fine. What about last year when they were on the board, could have had Ladd McConkey, and they got Jalen Polk instead? Disaster. So I don't want them even taking a wide receiver. The group that's here, now hopefully you move on from one or two of those guys.
Right.
But it's insanely young. They're all 22, 23, 24. So if I add Tet McMillan to that group, talent-wise, he should be the best, but I don't know how that's going to go. I would rather get an established wide receiver, Davante Adams, Cooper Kupp. That's why I'm kind of annoyed about the Deebo Samuel thing. Then adding a receiver to this group right now, the first round pick.
So I'm with you. And especially if you're talking about trading down, like certainly at 4, I'm not taking a receiver. If you're trading down from 4, I don't want them trading down further than 10. I've said before, if you're going to trade down to 10, I like Genty there. I like Tyler Warren there. That's a running back and a tight end. I'm not trading down to take a wide receiver there. Now, you want to take a wide receiver late in the first round, trade back in, fine.
See, I don't even want that.
You don't want that? You don't trust Elliot Wolf?
Right.
Fine. If you want to take a wide receiver on day 2 in round 2 or 3, fine. But I'm with you on this, Keith. There's enough receivers that we think are available. We've gone through the names a million times. Higgins, Godwin, Adams, Kupp. Samuel was on the list. He's now crossed off that list. You want to go further down it, the Amari Coopers of the world and guys like that. There's enough names available. Never mind the guys via trade like DK Metcalf. I've mentioned George Pickens a lot. Guys who I think can be had via trade. There's so many available, I'd rather see them go that route. And unfortunately, they had an opportunity to get in on Deebo Samuel, and he is now a Washington Commander, which annoys me when you really look at what happened in that trade. The Commanders were in the same exact spot as you a year ago. In fact, worse. They were drafting 2, you were drafting 3. They needed a quarterback, so did you. They got their quarterback. We think the Patriots got theirs in Drake May. Washington spent a little in free agency and had more success in free agency than the Patriots did. They drafted better than the Patriots did. And now, after making the playoffs and winning double-digit games and going to the NFC Championship game, they add Deebo Samuel for their young quarterback. Yeah. And the Patriots won't, with the most cap space in the league, for only a 5th-round pick for Deebo Samuel. Look, I'm fearful that he's cooked, but that was a really low acquisition price.
Yeah.
They should have been in.
Well, and last year, too, you look at what the Commanders did that was different than you, is they brought in a lot of real pros, and I think it got overlooked at the time, myself included. I didn't think that Austin Ekeler or Zach Ertz or Bobby Wagner were going to be great.
I bet,
and they all were.
I bet. If you went back and found tapes at the time, I bet I mocked it. I bet I was like, these are stupid signings.
And it worked. And they got a real head coach in there, too. And so now you could argue, all right, the Patriots were a year late on that part of it. All right, so now, like Mike Vrabel, Dan Quinn are a lot more similar than certainly Gerard Mayo and Dan Quinn are. So you upgraded that spot. But now you better add some veteran guys, and whether they have links to Vrabel with the Titans or not, you got to bring in some guys. That's why I'd be a little fearful of having that whole room just be young guys. It just seems a little high. He's certainly no guarantee. So we started down this path because the caller pointed out that, you know, most of his numbers came from two games. Like, okay, you know, that's fine. But how do you feel about the actual prospect himself, or just Elliott Wolf and Mike Vrabel drafting a wide receiver that high? You know, Shine was in earlier. His opinion, he thinks there might be three guys that could start at left tackle right away. That would be way more intriguing to me at 7, 8, 9, 10, depending on how far you trade down. Grab one of those guys. Then you can use more of your resources, like money-wise, and other draft picks if you want to trade those and fill in some of those other needs that you have. And then maybe you get your starting left tackle in the draft. Like that, I wouldn't feel bad about that.
Is it fair to extrapolate their approach with Deebo Samuel, where it seems like they weren't in at all? The other team that was supposedly in, outside of Washington, who got him for a fifth-round pick, was Houston. I haven't really heard anything credible about the Patriots being linked to Deebo Samuel. It seems like a hands-off approach. Is it fair to extrapolate that to their approach this offseason, or is that more isolated in your mind?
So because I don't know what the main reason was. If they were out on him because of money, well, that's kind of concerning. If they're out on him because they really want their fifth-round pick, that doesn't make sense. If they're out on him because they've come to the conclusion that he's washed, okay, that's at least a football decision and not a money decision.
Well, we've seen that, and we both theorized that before, because he's going to age like a running back, not like a receiver. I think that's important to remember. Who had the report last week that he's not a fit for their offense? I'm trying to remember who that was.
That was in one of the stories. You're right. Yeah. Which I was like, did they hear that from McDaniels, or are they just theorizing?
But my only point would be we've had other explanations beyond just they're not thinking he's going to age well, or they think he's cooked. I mean, we've also heard and read that maybe he's a poor fit in the offense, which I would try to figure out a way to get him in your offense if that's your hurdle. But, yeah, I don't want to extrapolate it yet, but let's see if they keep missing out on a few more guys.
But that's it. So right now, like, if you want to lose your mind about Deebo, go ahead. I'm not going to tell you how to live your life. I'm not going to lose my mind yet, but if all these other guys go off the board, like if Higgins and Godwin stay where they are, and if DK Metcalf stays where he is, and if Davante Adams just follows Aaron Rodgers to wherever he goes, and then they don't trade for Cooper Kupp, then you're like, wait a minute.
Right.
Like, you had to have something
you
in store.
You need to do something.
So Deebo might not have been your number one. Like, we both had our wide receiver wish list.
So I have it in front of me, and I was curious where they were. You did not have Deebo on your list, but you also had, you know, Higgins on there and Godwin on there. The reporting at the time, I was skeptical either of them would get to market.
But I'm saying, if like, all those guys are gone, all right, make that list 10. Like, right. Deebo would have been on my list of 10.
Right.
But those eight other guys or whatever it is better go somewhere else.
So, right. For me, it's like, I'm not going to kick and scream about Deebo because I had Kupp and Adams and Metcalf all higher. You had Higgins and Godwin and Adams and Kupp. You had all those guys on your list as well. So,
but now we know what the price was to get him.
Well, yeah. And that was less than I thought.
Yeah.
And I think you can get out of that contract pretty easily after a year. You're going to have to guarantee the money this year. There is more money. But I think if you deem that Deebo is done, cooked, I think you can get out of it. I don't think you're hampered going forward. And even if you are, the Patriots have oodles of cap space.
Right.
So I'm surprised he went for so little. I'm curious what Kupp is going to go for. But I'll present that scenario to you. If Kupp gets released and they sign Kupp,
I feel a lot better.
I'd rather have Kupp than Samuel anyway.
So I'm not going to lose my mind then. But I'm just saying, like, all right, this is at least off to a bad trend. And I don't know if they were even in it. And maybe they weren't in it because they feel really good about one of these other guys. Then so be it. Like, great. But if somehow everybody else slips through the cracks and you're like, oh, man, I wish we could have gone back and gotten that for a fifth-round pick. It's like, well, that's not how it works.
No. Let's go to Coach up in New Hampshire before we get into some specifics from the Herald. Go ahead, Coach.
Yes. When I think back on Josh McDaniels as an offensive coordinator, a guy like T. Higgins or DK Metcalf doesn't jump out at me as a guy that Josh McDaniels knows how to feature or could lure to New England and say, you know, you're going to get 12 targets a game. Now, I would be sold on a guy like Cooper Kupp, again, because of McDaniel's system and history of developing the Welkers and the Edelmans and such. Just wanted your comment on that, because I really think he hurts us going after that big, long, game-breaking wideout.
Yeah, so I don't know if
I disagree.
I don't know if he hurts for that specific player, but I think there's a chance McDaniels hurts in general with free agents. Mm. Like, I think there's a chance that he does.
See, I think he's not the head coach.
Right, but he wasn't popular with players.
Yeah, but if he wants to go and talk about...
In Denver or Vegas.
If you want to talk about scoreboards as far as like receivers are concerned, Devontae Adams, the full season that McDaniels was the head coach, had a monster season.
He did.
Their offense wasn't even that bad.
No.
The defense was terrible, and he's a bad overall head coach.
They were literally dancing in the locker room and lighting up victory cigars the second he left.
But his take these preventing guys, like Randy Moss had one of the best wide receiver years in the history of the NFL.
So I'm with you on that.
McDaniels.
But I do agree with Coach that I think Kupp, Godwin, slot receivers like that are better fits in the McDaniels offense than some of the outside guys.
But
to say he's never gotten it out of the outside guys is unfair. But Kupp, Godwin, guys like that are good fits in this offense.
But he also, as much crap as he... And listen, I'm not really super pro Josh McDaniels, just offering the other side of it. If everybody points to Tim Tebow, that he drafted Tim Tebow and what a disaster that was, he also drafted Demaryius Thomas and Eric Decker in that year. And, like, those guys got better after he left, but they also, like, developed. But those were big-time receivers. They weren't the prototypical slot receiver like Wes Welker and Julian Edelman. So he's had very productive receivers in his time in the NFL. So I don't know if he's one way or the other. I don't think he's a deterrent. I also don't think he's a real positive either. Like,
guys
I think
are lining up to play for him.
So I think they see Drake May. They see Mike Vrabel. I don't think Josh McDaniels is like, oh, he's also one of the three guys recruiting. But I also don't think guys are like, no way in hell am I going there.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have the power that he did in Oakland or in Denver.
I think that's fair. To worry about Josh McDaniels as an impediment, like the biggest impediment is craft. Is he going to spend or is he not? Like that's the single biggest thing.
True.
As was hammered home by the NFLPA survey, if he's not going to spend and he's going to cut corners like he does on his plane and his workout facility and everything else, then you're never going to get these players. And then it's up to Vrabel and May. Do people want to play with Drake May? Do people want to play for Mike Vrabel? You know, McDaniel's probably fair to put him somewhere on the list. And I would think he's more of a negative than a positive, but he is way down the list. That's fair.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in the Herald this weekend, good stuff from Andrew Callahan and Doug Kide. They have a list of top free agent targets for the Patriots. You ready, Keith?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Ravens left tackle Ronnie Stanley.
Hell yeah.
Eagles defensive tackle Milton Williams.
It's fine. I mean, it's not going to go crazy. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you.
Already that's a drop.
Fired up about it. Although, it's a bad free agent class, so he's probably a top five free agent.
49ers quarterback Javarius Ward.
That's a little surprising.
Okay. And Bucks wide receiver Chris Godwin.
Yes.
Are among the Patriots' top targets, according to sources. Though, members of the organization are doubtful Godwin will leave Tampa Bay. I would add, I'm a little skeptical Ronnie Stanley leaves Baltimore, but it is interesting they draw a line there. They say within the Patriots building, they're skeptical Godwin will get there, but he would be a target if he does. They, inside the building, don't seem to be worried about Ronnie Stanley getting to free agency. And I'll tell you, Mike Reese amplified this as well over the weekend, that the buzz at the Combine in Indianapolis is the Patriots are linked to Ronnie Stanley.
So will they make Ronnie Stanley the highest paid offensive lineman in the league? Because that's what it would take.
Right. Will they? Good question. Should they? Yes.
Yeah, they should. It's such a desperate need. We brought up the Mike Vrabel car analogy where there's like, hey, there's a bunch. You don't have to necessarily go to the highest, but there's only one that's worth a damn, then you better be really aggressive in getting him. That also goes back to Vrabel's point about really having the team pretty much set by the draft, and then from there just taking like best players and seeing where they kind of slot in. If you said you had Ronnie Stanley right now, that solves so many things.
It changes how you approach the draft 100%. At the top quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, of course it does. So, I don't know. I feel like out of Stanley, Higgins, and I know he's not on the list. He's actually on a different list. But Stanley, Higgins, and Godwin, three maybe the best free agents and or three guys that are all just going right back with their team. I feel like Higgins is actually the one that's most likely to go somewhere else. I think Stanley's staying, and I think Godwin's staying.
A couple more names in case you miss out on Ronnie Stanley. It says the Patriots would be comfortable signing any of, I don't love this.
This is where it turns into the quantity over quality, which is what they did last year.
Ronnie Stanley, good. Cam Robinson in Minnesota.
You hear mixed things on him.
I mean, I think he had a bounce back year last year in Minnesota, but he's a guy who was considered a bust in Jacksonville. Doug Marrone, Patriots O-line coach, was the head coach when they drafted him in Jacksonville. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. And then in the middle, they have the name Dan Moore out of Pittsburgh, who I am not familiar with
at all. They just made up a guy for this list.
But he's been the left tackle in Pittsburgh the last few years.
Although if you're unfamiliar, that's not the worst thing with a tackle.
No, it's true. It's not like you know that the guy's just a turnstile. That's fair.
That's
good point.
That's true. And it looks like he's missed like one game in the last 3 years.
I just don't like the way that's written. They're comfortable with any of the three. Stanley, Moore, Robinson.
Right, like you're not prioritizing.
Well, you should be wanting to sign one guy and then these other guys are the fallback. Maybe that's what they mean.
But the other thing, though.
But it kind of has them all on the same plane the way it's written.
But they're all better than what you have.
Well, yeah, of course.
But okay,
yeah.
So I guess I'll take it at that. Like those guys, you probably should have like a clear rankings just like for your draft. But if you're like, we almost have to get one of these guys, rather than like, hey, we'd feel comfortable with any of these guys, maybe it just means if we miss out on Ronnie Stanley, we're pivoting to one of these three guys who, at least depending on how the draft shakes out, we're going to pencil that guy in as a starter.
So the other side of the football, I was encouraged by this. Jamian Sherwood is a player they covet on defense. You may recognize him. He played for the Jets the last few years. Okay. So you may recognize him from Pat's games against the Jets. 6'2", 216. Kide and Callahan, right? He hits harder than his listed frame would suggest.
216?
Yep. That's too light for you?
It's like me after breakfast. That's not great. He's a linebacker?
The exact type of physical, violent player Vrabel wants. I like the word violent.
Violence.
The Patriots are working to infuse more speed in their defensive front, which would feature smaller, faster players under Vrabel and new D coordinator Terrell Williams compared to most of the defenses of the past two decades. That does feel like a real change. Like, Bill liked the big two-gapping, big, heavy, second-level players. Like think of like Bentley and guys like that.
Yeah.
This would be a shift in that way. And I think the Patriots need a shift on defense to more speed. Now, maybe 216 is too small.
Yeah.
But the Jets have had a good physical, violent defense the last few years. Not a good team, but a good physical, violent defense.
I feel like Marte Mapu would just be a linebacker on this team.
Yeah, then. Maybe. Yeah. I don't pretend to be an expert on him, even though the Patriots play against him twice a year the last few years. But if they're going to covet someone like that in the middle of their defense to get faster and more athletic, I can get on board with that.
Yeah, no, I just want Vrabel and Williams to come in and put their imprint on the defense. You know, the defense needs to turn around. We focus so much on receivers and O linemen because when you watch that, like how bad the offense was, and you're trying to support Drake May. But the truth is, the defense took a huge step backwards last year. You know, Belichick leaves, but you're like, oh, well, Mayo's still here, so they'll run some of that. No, it was a mess. And yeah, there were some guys were hurt, but then you also had a full season out of Gonzalez. So like the defense should have been at least the same, but it was worse. So whatever Vrabel and Williams want to do to it, like I'll trust those guys.
You have to imagine they're going to get more out of the defense than Mayo did a year ago, for sure. By the way, the Herald also notes they're out on Josh Sweat, which is annoying.
That's odd.
He's not expected to receive interest from the Patriots. Neither are Amari Cooper, Steph Diggs, Khalil Mack.
That's probably for the best.
Yeah, I don't. The next three don't bother me so much. I wonder why they're not in on Sweat. Do they feel he's not?
Unless they're cooking something
fit?
Else. Okay,
but
I don't know.
But this, I would have an issue with this. If he's not a scheme fit, okay, fine. He's not a scheme fit. If it's because he's the top edge rusher on the market and they don't want to pay for it, similar to T. Higgins,
yeah, but
then I would have a problem with that.
But right now they haven't done anything.
Nope.
So right now they're just saying they're interested. The Red Sox were interested in Juan Soto.
Yep.
Or at least that's what
allegedly,
we were told.
Yes.
So like, I feel like you would say, which makes me feel like maybe this list is legitimate, because wouldn't you just say all the top guys?
If they're just going to be interest kings,
yeah. Because like Ronnie Stanley is going to make a ton of money.
I get what you're saying.
So they clearly have some line in the sand on why he is in and why Josh Sweat isn't.
I do like this. Guys, you say you want them to spend in free agency and then you hate all the players. That's not wrong.
I hate a lot of the players, but if they sign Ronnie Stanley to the highest paid O-lineman contract, neither one of us will bitch about the money.
Nope.
If they trade for like DK Metcalf and then give him a huge contract, we're not going to bitch about that. Right. Or even T. Higgins or like what. So I understand what the texts are saying, because the free agent list is not great. If you show me the list of the top 10 free agents, five of those, well, first of all, they're all going to be overpaid, and I'll complain about maybe half of them.
Yeah.
The other half, though, like I'll take, and they need.
But it underscores that it's not a great year to be at the top of the draft and to have the most cap space in the NFL. Like last year was the year to do a lot of this stuff. And outside of Drake May, and I guess Milton, they whiffed on the draft. They completely whiffed on free agency. Like last year was the year to get in there and do some of this. And they did not. So they're a year behind because of it. 617-779-7937. Coming up at the end of the hour, Keith will recap a busy, busy weekend. Oscars, Elimination Chamber.
I can't wait. It was a hell of a weekend.
Heel turns. Oh. Shocking Oscar winners. So we'll get to all of it coming up.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed.
Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball.
Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
It got a little interesting this week. Speaking of John Lynch, he was asked about some rumors that teams have called or he's had conversations surrounding potentially trading Brandon Ayuk, who is injured, who tore his ACL, who may not be ready. We'll see for the start of training camp or maybe the start of the season. Lynch said those conversations are productive. He said they do want to get younger. Obviously, there's a lot of cash to go around this offseason, likely paying Brock Purdy. Just, I would say, a situation to keep an eye on for San Fran.
Ian Rappaport on Brandon Ayuk. Remember that name?
Of course.
Apparently available again now that the Niners have, and even before they had officially dealt Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk's name out there and available. He got hurt last year. He got paid last year. Should the Patriots be in?
Yeah. They should be in on all these guys.
It's another name to throw on the list when we're talking about all these receivers.
Disappointing, right? But last year we spent a lot of time talking about where Brandon Ayuk ranks. Who do you like better? He's had a better career probably than T. Higgins. Now, you might like T. Higgins more. That's fine.
That's a good one.
Don't you think?
Who do I prefer out of those two? I mean, right now, because Higgins is healthy, I think I'd say Higgins, but I would have said, if I know Ayuk's healthy, I would say Ayuk.
I think for the next 5 years, I'd rather have T. Higgins, but for what they've each done their first 5 years of their career, I would say advantage Brandon Ayuk. Mm-hmm. He's had 2,000-yard seasons. He's had...
I mean, his year last, the 2023 year, what did he finish with?
75 for 1,342 yards and 7 touchdowns.
I mean, Higgins hasn't done
second team All-Pro.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was really good, but like we were talking about with Deebo and McCaffrey and really every single player who played for the 49ers last year, it was just a mess. You know, Ayuk only played in 7 games. It was a slow start, the whole weird thing with the offseason, but I'm not going to just take those 7 games. So
honestly, he's their Jeremy Swayman.
Maybe.
Ayuk is their Swayman. I mean, he's been much more productive prior to getting paid, but he's their Swayman.
I feel like your answer should probably be the same. If you wanted Ayuk last year, then I think you should still want him, even though it was a disappointing 7-game season for him. I don't think it should completely change. Whereas if you were out on him, then after last year, yeah, you're still out. Like, I don't, you're certainly not back in.
Well, and now you know what it takes contract-wise with him because now he's been paid, where before that was up in the air.
But this at least goes to show you there might be 8 to 10 receivers who you could make a case for that would come in and it immediately help Drake May, immediately help the team, would push everybody else down the depth chart a little bit. And none of them are perfect, hence why they're all possibly available. But, I'd add him to the list.
Two more names from the Herald, and we've talked about them a lot, but details on them.
Mm-hmm.
Both Callahan and Kide write, the Patriots plan to pursue Cincinnati's T. Higgins until it was reported last week. The Bengals are expected to retain him via the franchise tag for the second straight year. League sources universally do not see Higgins as being available right now.
I'm surprised.
You disagree with that?
I really do. I mean, I don't know what this is based on. So the Cincinnati Bengals, who are one of the cheapest organizations in franchise
they have to tag
or in league history,
they have to tag him by tomorrow, right?
Yeah, Tuesday's the...
Yeah, so like tomorrow at like 4 o'clock, something like that, they have to tag him or else he is going to be available.
So this, they finished dead last in that survey in freshness of the food. They have the worst food in the league.
Yeah, they finished ahead of the Patriots overall in the survey, but for food specifically, they finished dead last.
But they finished not great.
They didn't even give their players three meals a day.
No. For a team that was in the Super Bowl just a couple of years ago, and there's always those great clips on practice day where they have to like cross a street to get over to practice. So the Cincinnati Bengals are famously cheap organization.
They were selling when they replaced the TVs in their stadium in like the suites and whatever, the locker room and everything else, they were selling those televisions to fans.
For real.
In Cincinnati.
It's a real story.
To make some money back.
Correct. So they just paid Joe Burrow.
Yep.
They're going to be forced to pay Ja'Marr Chase. He's going to be the highest paid wide receiver. He's going to be the highest paid non-quarterback in the history of football.
And supposedly those negotiations aren't going well. You know why?
Shocking.
Because he wants $40 million a year. Yeah. And they're like, ugh.
I think eventually
Tobin came out and said they're going to do it. He's in charge of their personnel. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. He's in charge of their personnel. I'm sure Duke Tobin's like, well, yeah, I know what it's going to take. We're going to have to make him the highest non-paid quarterback in the league. And then you run it upstairs to Brown, and he's like, yeah, we're not $40 million a year.
So maybe that doesn't even happen. I think it does. So I think they go insane on Ja'Marr Chase. Not even insane. I just think it's going to be a big number. He's worth it. I bet they signed Trey Hendrickson before they signed T. Higgins.
So this was a note they had in the Herald that I think it was them. Oh, maybe that was Giardi. I forget now. Somebody had a note over the weekend that they are I think it was Giardi, actually. They're prioritizing Higgins over Hendrickson. But that's just his reporting.
So that would be interesting because you had a really good offense last year and you still missed the playoffs. And so just bringing back the same offense, like, what does that do for you? Like, we're going to do more offense. Like, well, you guys need to do some defense.
The other way to look at it, though, would be, yeah, let's just keep the offense the same and try to fix the defense.
If you're going
to
be a bear, be a grizzly philosophy.
Related story, by the way, they released an offensive lineman today. Alex Kappa, I think his name is. To save some money against the cap.
They brought him in a couple years ago, right after their offensive line was so bad.
So maybe that's the beginning of freeing up money to pay Chase and Hendrickson and Higgins.
I don't see how that organization does it. And maybe they tag T. Higgins. I could see them still tagging T. Higgins. They need to see how this goes.
A T-tag, as many. It was trending a few weeks ago. Yeah.
I don't think too many have caught on to that. But, like, this, similar to your Bruins analogy a second ago, we're talking about Brandon Ayuk. You know, they didn't have Swayman locked up, and they traded Ullmark.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't have Chase locked up yet, so you're not going to just, like, let T. Higgins go.
Fair point.
You need to T-tag him, as some would say.
Many.
But I still think he's going to be gone. Like, even if they end up just franchising him, that's a ton of guaranteed money for 1 year, which they're going to have to, you know, set aside. That's where the trade comes in, and that's where, all right, now you have to really love T. Higgins because you're not just paying him. You're also going to have to give up a big pick.
Note on DK Metcalf as well, who's the top receiver for me this offseason, even more so than Higgins. Even if Higgins were not tagged and you could just sign him as a free agent, I would attach the draft pick to Metcalf and rip it up and pay him a new contract because I think he's a superior player. Patriots prefer signing Higgins or Godwin over a trade for another number one receiver like Ayuk or maybe Pickens or Metcalf for the simple fact they would rather sign someone into their nearly $128 million worth of cap space instead of surrendering draft capital in a deal and significant cap space on top of it. Because the reason Metcalf is going to be out of Seattle is he probably wants a new deal and you're going to have to pay him. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get him on this contract. The Herald continues, the front office has nonetheless kicked the tires on a potential trade for Seattle's DK Metcalf per source. While it weighs the ripple effects of making a player they're not familiar with, like Metcalf, the new highest paid player on the team. So that line I don't like. If that's specifically about Metcalf and they're hearing things personality-wise or about his makeup where maybe he wouldn't be a good fit, fine. But when they say they're weighing the ripple effects of making a player they're not familiar with the new highest paid player on the team.
You're going to piss off Jelani Tavai?
They better be doing that this offseason. Like, they better be bringing in players they're not necessarily familiar with and making them the highest paid player on the team, or else you're running it back with your crappy team.
Wouldn't the guys on the team be more annoyed if you didn't do this? And if they're not, they're part of the problem. If they're like, hey, we have it covered. We don't need any of these guys. Hey, you're going to pay that guy? Yeah, that guy may have done something in the league. You guys are back-to-back four-win seasons. So who's going to stand in there and be like, how is that guy coming and getting a bigger deal? That's how the league works, right? That guy is now available, and if they were doing something good in the league, then they're going to get prioritized, and they're going to sign a big contract. If they bring in somebody, was that what happened last year? Elliott Wolf's like, hey, we don't want to send a ripple through the locker room, so we're just going to re-sign all of our own guys.
Maybe.
But like, you guys earned it. It's like,
all three guys that are making double-digit millions are going to be really upset.
Yeah. Right, seriously. Yeah, how many guys do they even have?
Barmore, Onwenu, Duggar.
Somebody, they better bring in somebody higher paid than those guys. They better.
That kind of sums it. So the three highest paid guys on the team are a right guard, a D tackle who unfortunately is injured or has health concerns, and a big safety.
That's just by AAV, but yeah.
No, but that's fine.
Yeah, let's go. That's good.
Those are the three highest paid guys.
Yep.
A guard, a safety who can't cover anybody, and a oft injured D tackle.
Drake May is the fourth highest paid player, and he was a first.
Really?
That's why. That's why it's slotted that
way. Wow.
Yeah, but even still, the money's not where it used to be.
Where's Ramondre? He's high on that list,
just
too, isn't
below
he?
May by $600,000.
So a running back on there, too. So quarterback they have nailed. The other top five, you're like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
They really should have three guys coming in making more than all those guys.
So if that's specifically about Metcalf, I'll stand down. But the way it's written,
that's weird.
They're worried about ripple effects of making somebody they don't know the highest paid player on the team, which unless to your
point... Well, then get to know them quickly and then pay them.
Or unless they're Vrabel guys like A.J. Brown or Jeffrey Simmons or something like that.
Yeah, okay.
I understand what you're saying.
That's
but
something.
That I didn't love. A couple more items just real quick from the Herald story.
Yeah, they ripped the lid off of it.
Multiple sources doubt Jerod Mayo will return to coaching.
Whatever?
I mean, that's
he's just done?
That's the way it's written.
So the guy got back into coaching so he could be a head coach, had one bad year, and he's done?
Out.
Well, maybe, listen, you know what you're good at, you know what you're bad at, you just live your life.
Note on Robin Glazer, too.
Jeez, oh yeah, she was getting buried in this thing.
She was. Former executive VP of football business Robin Glazer has also gone from the Patriots and out of the league. Multiple sources told the Herald that Glazer tried to cut costs around the organization to ensure they were spending more effectively.
Okay.
They go on to rip her more.
Cost cutters.
But like, so now we're going to blame the Crafts cheaping out on stuff on Robin Glazer? Like, that's stupid.
I'm not going to buy that because they already blamed it on Belichick.
Right.
And then they had the exact same kind of offseason that they normally did under Belichick. So I'm not going to blame Bill for that, and I'm not going to blame Robin Glazer for that.
She might have been trying to cut costs.
That might be what they asked her to do.
Thank you. Because she was empowered by Robert and more likely Jonathan.
You think she woke up one day and was like, I'm going to try to save us a bunch of money?
Seriously.
I don't think so.
It's like, no. They commissioned her to do that or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she was just attempting to do her job. Not well. But like the idea that she was just cutting costs on her own, like, come on, let's come off that one. So those are a couple other minor notes you can jump in on. 617-779-7937. You can still vote. Jones and Keefe, Twitter and Instagram, the Jones and Keefe bracket. Four topics for you there, which will be the topic for our March Madness bracket. We'll unveil that tomorrow.
It is razor thin.
It is.
Your vote really does matter. I know, like Joan said, it always matters.
Yeah,
but
this
time it actually matters.
Vote or die, people, is what you need to do because you don't want to see. You do not want to see your topic lose out.
Mm-hmm.
We'll unveil that tomorrow. Vote now at Jones and Keefe. And on the way next, Keefe was watching everything this weekend.
What a weekend for me.
The Elimination Chamber. The Oscars. We have a full breakdown coming up next.
And the Oscar goes to... Are they playing a song?
No. Well, maybe. Oh, Anora.
What a weekend. Holy smokes. You had WWE's Elimination Chamber on Saturday night, followed by the 97th Academy Awards on Sunday night. Both, I'll tell you what, I don't know when this started. These 7 o'clock start times are great for us on the East Coast, but they sneak up on you, and I'm not ready for it. Everything's always started at 8. Wrestling, Oscars, other award shows, sometimes even 9. 7 o'clock start.
My wife had to tell me. I thought it was starting at 8. She goes, hey, the Oscars are about to start. I go, no. They're supposed to start at 8. We looked at the guide, and I'm like, oh, thing starts in like 5 minutes. So,
Oscars
good for us.
Oscars are starting at 7 o'clock. Conan O'Brien.
Yeah.
Nice little cold open with the – well, no, they had the ladies from Wicked performed.
Mm-hmm.
And brought the house down.
I mean,
people love that.
I want to mock it because they've been everywhere for months.
Yeah.
But that was a good performance last night.
Neither took home a little golden statue.
Nope.
Didn't happen for them. Anora was the big winner. Anora, which is really like a sex comedy. There's some tension. So somebody described it to me as this. If you have not seen Anora.
I've not seen it.
Most people have it. That's the thing. Most of these movies, with the exception of Dune and Wicked, like nobody saw it.
I was 0-10 on Best Picture this year. Yeah,
I was 8-10.
Nice,
but I like this stuff.
Yeah.
I'm in on this stuff. So Anora, it's sort of like Pretty Woman meets Uncut Gems. It was a great description I heard of it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But way more nudité.
Lot of nudité from what I've heard.
Nudité I know cussing.
Okay.
A lot of swearing. I think Conan O'Brien even had a joke about how they said the F word like 467 times or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he made fun of the actress from Emilia Perez, which was under some hot water.
Yeah, the PR person had more F-bombs. Yeah.
So Emilia Perez was like the favorite to win all these awards, get nominated a million times, like whatever it was, 2 months ago. And since then, there's been a lot of backlash for the actress herself. They dug up some old tweets, which apparently were not well received. And then there's also just sort of how certain communities view the movie. I mentioned last week how it's a Mexican movie, but the people who made the movie are French. There's also a transgender person in the movie, so that's obviously pretty polarizing on how that was depicted. So it got nominated for all these awards. It won one. I think it won song too, but it didn't win any of the major ones with the exception of supporting actress.
Yeah.
And Zoe Saldana, I like a lot. She plays Gamora in Guardians of the Galaxy. But
dude, her acceptance speeches are tough.
Hard watch.
So it was
hard.
It was bad. It was bad at the Golden Globes.
Yes.
And then it was bad again last night.
I can't stand it. I love movies. I love all this stuff. But you play pretend. You get to go up there and play pretend. It's not as serious as you make it out to be.
No.
The tears, the this, that, and the other thing, it's way too obnoxious. So I get why people make fun of it. But Anora was the massive winner. Sean Baker is the director. He edits the thing. He wrote the thing. He won awards for all that. And Mikey Madison beat out Demi Moore for Best Actress. I think both were deserving, but Mikey Madison wins it. She also becomes, this is important, the first ghost face killer from a Scream movie to win an Oscar.
Oh, you know what? Because I didn't realize she was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. They mentioned that during the show last night, so
yeah.
I checked her IMDb. I saw she was in one of the Scream remakes.
Yes, she was in Scream. I think they just called it Scream. It was technically
Scream
5.
Honestly, her role in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood probably gave away that she was the killer in Scream.
Maybe. Sean Baker said last night if it wasn't for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, there would be a no Anora.
Correct.
He saw that movie, saw her in it, then cast her.
Hang on, but real quick.
Anora.
The order of the Scream movies goes Scream, Scream 2, Scream 3, Scream 4, Scream?
Scream 6.
Yep, and Scream 7.
Yeah.
All right, that's confusing.
So it was a long layoff, and so it was what they call a requel. So it was like both a reboot and a sequel.
They were making fun of the other movies that had already done that. Yeah. Like Halloween did it twice.
But us fans called Scream 5.
Got it.
We know. We called
the hardcore fans.
Yeah.
Okay.
Adrian Brody won Best Actor. He went on to have a 5-minute and 40-second acceptance speech, which is the longest speech in Oscars history.
Really?
There's never been a...
It felt long. I'm shocked it's the longest one in Oscars history, but it went on and on, for
someone
sure.
Named Greer Garson had a 5.5-minute speech, which was, prior to that, the longest. Yeah, they told him to stop playing the music.
He's like, nope.
It should have been Timothée Chalamet. So both movies I didn't really love. I thought the Bob Dylan movie was better than The Brutalist. And Chalamet was sitting front row with his girlfriend, Kylie Jenner.
Yeah, she was noticeable.
She was definitely noticeable. They showed her a few times.
Yep.
That was pretty much the award show. Conan O'Brien, I thought, was fine. Kind of a safe host.
Fine to me is the right word for it. I laughed a couple of times, but fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely not bad. Didn't bomb, but fine.
So he's not Ricky Gervais, where he's making everybody uncomfortable, but he's, like, I guess, willing to mention certain things where he's not over the top.
Yeah.
You mentioned regular people might enjoy watching him.
Right. You mentioned the text from Emilio Perez.
Yeah.
He had the firefighters in LA up telling some jokes, which I thought was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, boom roasted Joker 2. Adam Sandler showed up.
That was good. But overall, Conan was fine. I like Conan, but he was fine.
I do like the 7 o'clock start time because the thing was over around 10:30.
Nice.
So even if it goes long, it's 10:30. But Jones, this really pales in comparison to the events of the Elimination Chamber.
We buried the lead.
This thing still got the people talking, and the road to WrestleMania is more than heating up. So, Elimination Chamber, you had like 4 matches, 2 chambers, and really it all came down to the men's Elimination Chamber, which was the final event.
Mm-hmm.
6 men enter, only 1 will leave as the victor. John Cena, in his final Elimination Chamber, got the win. So he defeats everybody else.
Which you guys saw coming. Billy predicted
Billy
this last
was on
week.
It.
You saw,
yes.
Like, I think you guys saw that part of it coming.
Yeah, because he didn't win the Royal Rumble, which a lot of us thought he might win the Royal Rumble, and then he gets to, you know, have a main event at WrestleMania. It's his last WrestleMania. He's not going to be on the pre-show, right? He's gonna be in there. He's going to go for the title. So he wins this thing, but that's not where the night did not end there, right?
No.
So there's been this storyline going where Cody Rhodes is the champion and The Rock, those guys feuded last year. The Rock is also, in real life, a member of the board of the TKO Studios, which owns WWE now. So he legitimately is one of the bosses, right?
Okay.
So he has this weird whole gimmick where he wants Cody to be his champion, right? And he's like, I want your soul. Like he went that far. He legit wants his soul.
I like that.
But Cody's a face.
Like a Nightman.
He's a face, not a heel.
Okay.
So he had to think about it. He's like, yeah, I need your answer at Elimination Chamber. So after the match, John Cena's in the ring. He has just won the match. Cody Rhodes comes out just because, they're going to, those are going to be the two that meet. Kind of odd, right? Both are good guys. So they're going to meet at WrestleMania. So then the Rock's music hits. Rock comes out with, for no reason, Travis Scott.
Okay.
Entertainer Travis Scott.
Sure.
Who's smoking what appears to be a marijuana cigarette the entire time.
Okay.
He's got like a blunt. He's like in the ring and The Rock's talking, Cena's talking, Cody's talking. They're all taking turns talking. He's like in the corner, like waving around this blunt. Pat McAfee goes, I think Travis Scott's saging the ring. That's what he says. That made no sense. I don't know why he was there. He's obviously famous, but like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
So then The Rock's like, hey, I need your answer. And Cody's like, you can go bleep yourself, but did not bleep himself.
Oh.
He said it.
Wow.
A hard F.
He went there.
Yeah. On Peacock, they let it fly.
Nice.
And so you're like, all right, that's odd.
Drugs and curse words.
But then John Cena and Cody Rhodes embrace. And The Rock looks at John Cena, locks eyes with John Cena, who at this point has been a good guy his entire wrestling career, spanning decades. The Rock looks at him, gives him the slit throat gesture.
Throat slash.
To which John Cena backs away from Cody Rhodes, kicks him in the testicles.
Whoa.
Thus turning heel for the first time in his career.
Wow. A testy kick.
Prior to that, right after that, they want to do some work to Cody Rhodes, right? They want to beat him down a little bit, soften him up, whatever you want to call it,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
Stretch him out.
Yeah.
So John Cena's at his feet, and he's kind of stretching him out. He's laid down on the ground. Travis Scott, again, I don't know why he's there. He grabs the face of Cody Rhodes, kind of lifts him up. So he looks almost like a walrus or a seal.
Yeah.
To which point, John Cena has to push him back down because that was not part of the plan, Travis Scott. Travis Scott's high as a kite. He can't remember what he's supposed to be doing. So they finally stretch him out. Rock and Cena looking at Travis Scott like, what are you doing? You know what Travis Scott does?
What's that?
Punches Cody Rhodes in the face.
Oh, man.
Like, legit punches him in the face.
Man.
I don't know what's going on with this guy.
I should have been watching this.
He shouldn't be there. Yeah, they potatoes him. Just bam, punches him in the face. I think maybe we're going for like a working punch. He went with like a live round.
Not a working punch.
So then they beat him up a little bit more. John Cena's hitting him with the belt. People can't believe it. There's reaction videos all over the world. First time ever John Cena is the heel. Travis Scott's there. No idea why. But now the road to WrestleMania is heating up. So we're going to get Cena, Cody Rhodes. Cena's a bad guy.
Okay. Already seeing We Need a Jones and Keith WrestleMania watch party.
Yes.
The closing chamber segment should have won an Oscar.
It should have. John Cena, I felt, was robbed. He didn't get nominated for Ricky Stenicki, and he could have been. Can you imagine if he took home an Oscar and won Elimination Chamber the same weekend?
No, I mean,
nobody's doing that.
People can EGOT, but yeah. Can't
do that.
Whatever that
E-Chamber Oscar
acronym that would be.
ECO.
Yeah, an ECO.
The ECO.
Yeah, he can't necessarily ECO. It's really actually easier than
that. Wait a minute, he won the Elimination Chamber and the Oscar? Although Dave Bautista probably could. He's a good actor.
I saw him on the red carpet yesterday.
He's Dune. He's in the Dunes.
Here we go. Brilliant tease, Jones. I stayed in my work truck for Elimination Chamber talk. I could have knocked out another stop if I knew you were going to slip in the Oscars.
Sorry. Well, you can all blame part of the big weekend.
You can blame Keith for that.
I apologize for nothing.
I gave Keith carte blanche to talk about whatever he wanted. He chose to go Oscars first.
I went first because I wanted to save the best for last. Yeah. I didn't want it to be anticlimactic, and it was. That's how they ended the Elimination Chamber. Also, Owens and Zayn had another great match. That was prior in the night. But, yeah, this whole John Cena heel turn thing is getting the people fired up.
So what happens at WrestleMania, Billy? What happens?
Cena wins.
Cena wins. He goes out on top as a heel?
Well, no, he'll end WrestleMania. Like, he won't end the year, which is his final year.
Yeah, he's doing the year, like, I think he's going to keep going.
His career's not going to end with him as a bad guy.
Got it.
Yeah.
But he'll win the belt as a bad guy.
They got to get the belt off Cody. It's kind of boring having a good guy as the champ. It just is. Like, yeah. it's all about the chase. Once you win it, it's like, all right, how much longer are you going to have this for unless you decide to
turn? You've got to get the people going.
So, people are surprised by the Cena turn, and I guess ultimately I'm surprised by it too, but the second Cody told The Rock to go bleep himself, you kind of had to expect it because there's no way you're going to really build like good guy versus good guy for the next month, right? Like they have to have some sort of conflict. So as soon as that happened, you're like, oh, Cena's going to turn.
Nice.
And he did.
So what a weekend.
Sure was.
Cena robbed of echoing.
Yep.
But short of that, what a weekend. Keith recapped it for you there. A reminder, you can vote at Jones and Keith for our March Madness bracket. Four topics for you to vote. And your vote matters because right now it's a three-horse race out of the four options. We'll announce the winner tomorrow. And we'll get to the Red Sox. Spring training remains in full swing. When are we going to see the kids for the Red Sox? We'll get to that with all your phone calls next.